This is your third time on the show as well. We have started recording.
Yeah, I've
This
got
is your
time for that.
third
I've got this though. I've got this little
gingerbread. Oh.
yeah.
But you haven't
EU
got one.
gingerbread men.
How are you gonna? I mean, if you want to be part of this cult,
It's not a cult. It's
your
not a
religion
cult.
now.
Actually, you do look a bit Russell Brandy there today, I have to say. So maybe it is. I'm getting some serious brand vibes. Have you found Jesus?
Did you see his advert?
Hello, I'm just back from Narnia, where I had a holiday, Mr. Tumnus, Aslan, all those guys. And as you know, airports are places full of Wi-Fi and all sorts of evil energies. Think of all the phones out there, all of the signals, corruptible and corrupting. Luckily, I wear this magical amulet from Airstech that keeps me safe from all of the various signals out there. And also means, look at this, look how strong I am. I think this is making me more powerful, as a matter of fact. Look at that. This stuff is absolutely packed with Airstech. I didn't even bring any socks or toothbrush or dog meat or anything like that. Just completely full of Airstech. You should get one as well, particularly if you're planning to go to an airport anytime soon, because the bloody things are full of lethal signals. Airstech, a glorious amulet to protect you from corrupting signals.
Which literally looks like he's running out of an asylum with a carrier bag.
I
Maybe
know.
I haven't seen it. I try and avoid Russell Brand, like the plague.
Oh, God. You know, there's people on our side of the argument that were used to swear by him and thought he was great, but he's just gone nuts, utterly nuts. I mean, it's on a really basic level to try and evade the charges that are obviously maybe coming his way or probably ought to be by saying, I've just found Jesus. So, I get a pass
I'm
now.
good.
I
Christians
mean,
don't do
honestly,
anything bad.
I mean, talk about cynical. I mean,
Well, you
anyway.
know that I think it's the FDA in America have said that that device actually enhances the thing that he's trying to prevent.
More than likely. I mean, what's he charging for it? 250 quid?
Something like
Something
that.
like that. I haven't actually, I can't watch the actual thing. I bookmark stuff for my show and then eventually get around to it Saturday night, Sunday morning, and that, oh my God. At the moment, the pileup of Trump is, it's just ridiculous. I mean, honestly, you just have to wonder about the mental state of anyone who was undecided and just thinks, he's my guy. Yeah, where do you begin?
Welcome everybody to the Sunday Roast, and we have our special guest with us today, Ben from SMR. Ben, you've had a rebrand. Tell us about yourself.
Oh, I've had a little bit of a rebrand. Yeah, we're still SMR, and actually it was AC Grayling that quite a while ago said, "Oh, Ben, I do not like the fact that you're called 16 Million Rising. It reminds people of where we were, and we want to be talking about where we're going." So I thought, okay, I can't change. At that point, I thought, oh, it'd be a real nightmare to change all the branding and all the handles on Twitter and all the social medias. But it's not if you keep SMR. So we're now single-minded rejoiners, so which I think is pretty cool. Everything else is still the same. It's a radio show that's available free wherever you get your podcasts on Alexa. Just say, Alexa, play Single-Minded Rejoiners podcast. That should work. It's on Mixcloud in full stereo. You can subscribe. We need more subscribers. Please do. And if you do subscribe, the next four to subscribe, get one of these gorgeous little gingerbread men that Louise at Still Disgusted on Etsy made for me and gave to me at the march. So I'll
Oh.
send those to you with your CDs and all your other freebies and stuff like that. But yeah, Single-Minded Rejoiners, every Monday, brand new episode goes out around 6. You can listen whenever you like. Music, comedy, news, views, rants and bants, everything pertaining to our return journey to the EU. But yeah, I mean, recently I've interviewed Ken Loach about his film The Old Oak, which is
Wow.
an absolute masterpiece, probably his swan song.
Awesome.
Really, because it's set where I live up in Durham in the Pitt Villages. Really great film. Glenn Matlock, who is a staunch pro-European ex-Sex Pistol, and all the usual suspects. And we had a behind-the-scenes show at the march a couple of weeks ago where I spoke to everyone that was speaking and lots of people en route as well to try and get their sort of take on why they were there, which was really great fun. Liz is back.
Liz is back. Are you finding anything changing within your scene and people's attitudes? Are the youth
Well,
starting to come
yeah, and
through?
actually, it's funny you should say that because Stay European, one of the groups that we work with at National Rejoin March, has just put out a little book. I think it's called Rejoin the Facts. And the reason I asked him about this at the march, and he said it's not so much to try and convince people that rejoining is where we want to be going, because 60 plus percent of people that's the direction they're in. When it comes to under 25s, under 30s, I think it's way into the high 80s. It's more now to address the question of, well, is it practical? Is it something we can actually do? Aren't there barriers in the way? Will they want us back? Will we have to accept the euro? So it addresses all those questions that people have got about, well, yeah, we know we want to be back in the European Union. Obviously, that's a given. But are there now barriers to it? And I mean, I've read it. It's great. And it addresses all those questions. You can get it from the Stay European shop and Stay European website. So, yeah, I've noticed a shift from, I think, people wondering whether campaigning to rejoin the EU was a good idea, because even European Movement was sceptical about what we were doing. They've now fully come on board. So it's taken 3 years to get them fully on board. We're already working on the 2025 March. We've got lots of plans for that. Peter and I want to do a music festival as well, which will look a mini pro-European Glastonbury in Liz, one of Liz's fields. Obviously, we'd have to commandeer that. But yeah, so I've always been optimistic about the direction of travel and where we're going. Obviously, the speed that some people are talking about, we've got people saying, oh, maybe 10 to 20 years. Well, you know, there's a lot of people that can't afford to wait that long. You know, this is affecting families, small businesses, medium-sized businesses up and down the country right now. It's just a question of, well, do we want to wait another year before we even apply? Because the damage is just increasing and piling on us. And as so many people have noticed, we're not even exercising our newfound sovereignty, but we're just delaying all these Brexit benefits. Well, checks at ports, checks at Dover, checks at wherever. Well, let's just put that off again. Why are we constantly doing that? If this was such a great idea, we'd be just like, let's get cracking on with it. There's early doors. Let's get all these checks started. But we're not. It's all delay, mitigate. And it just like, for me, that's all you need to know. This was a disaster. I mean, it's the biggest con. I say at the beginning of every show, the biggest con ever perpetrated on a country. And it's just a question of when we reverse it. You know?
I mean, you've brought up so many decent questions there as well that we're going to definitely touch on. I do need to bring in Liz just to introduce her to everyone.
Sorry,
you're
shut up now.
No, not at all. No. I mean, you tempt me to continue without introducing ourselves. Liz, can you introduce yourself?
Hello, I am Liz Webster, and I am the founder of Save British Farming, which is a campaign all about trying to save British food, something which is actually the most impacted by Brexit, and something which, when people are hungry, will actually forget about the facts for rejoining and realise that we just have to get on with it, because if we don't have enough food, we're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge security issue that's just not being talked about. Hi, I'm Alex. I'm also known as Political X. I'm a YouTuber, historian, author, and podcaster. So we're going to be talking about, I was going to talk about and start off with Trump, because we're talking about crazy and Russell Brand. And all of these wackadoodle inventions that actually make the thing that he's trying to prevent worse, according to the FDA. Let's talk about Trump and his dancing. How did you guys see that? Did you actually witness what had happened?
Obviously, I haven't watched the full 30 minutes, wasn't it? 40 minutes. I mean, it's difficult to know where to begin. I mean, we already know that the guy is losing his mental acuity, whatever's left of it. And the one big argument before Kamala Harris came along was, of course, that Joe Biden was too old and infirm and possibly senile. Well, now all those accusations are rightly headed in Trump's direction, and he can't really refute them. And he seems to be doing everything he possibly can to make it worse for himself, which I just don't. I mean, I do understand he's got everyone who's going to vote for him on the same page already. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I think he said, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and they'd still vote for me.
Yep.
I mean, he's just proving that with every single thing that he says. And I go through compiling for the show, bookmarking everything I find on Twitter, all Kamala Harris's sort of responses and reactions to what he said and done. There are now so many of them, and they're so ridiculous. I think we hit a kind of a Everest peak with this, you know, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats.
Yeah.
And since then, it's just got worse and worse and worse. And yeah, I mean, in some respects, I feel sorry for him, like I feel sorry for Liz Truss. She's not right in the head. I don't think he's right in the head. He's certainly not equipped in any way to be president of the most powerful country in the world again. I have conversations with people. Graham Hughes, who also lives up here, is convinced he's going to win. And I'm saying, look, Graham, please don't say that, because everything in my head wants to say all the swing voters will be converted to the Democrat campaign.
So to give context to the dance, because it then gives context to whether or not he might win, I think you're right. I think he is having cognitive decline. And I think that was a really big sign with the dance, believe it or not. So the context was two people fainted in the crowd. And so he then decided, right, we'll calm everything down, make sure everything is okay. Then he asked the question, does anyone else want to faint? Which is just bizarre. And then you think, well, if people are fainting, it might be due to the temperature in the room. So his solution is to get everyone up and dancing for the next 30 to 40 minutes. But it gets worse because it was a town hall. So everyone was there to have a Q&A with him or listen to a Q&A. And instead, he goes into dance. But do you know what the songs were, though?
No,
Ave Maria.
Yeah.
But he didn't play it once. He played a classical version, and then he demanded that the Pavarotti version be played. You're like, oh, my God.
I mean, Ave Maria's, it's not your classic for doing his jerking two guys off at once dance to, is it, really? I mean, I don't know really... Look, I mean, it's almost beneath discussion, in the same way that Russell Brand's Amulet should be beneath discussion, beneath intelligent discussion. What is there to say? The guy's nuts. Anyone that's voting for him has got mental health problems and needs an intervention. There's just nothing to say. I believe at that town hall, someone asked him about gun control and his response was, well, we need guns for entertainment. Okay, fine. Right. Which begs the question, what do you consider weekly school shoot 'em ups entertaining? Do you? I mean, it's just beneath discussion. There's nothing to say.
When you hear stuff like that, I end up thinking to myself, is this all part of the cognitive decline? Because there was almost an element where when he was playing that music, he just got lost. That's the impression I got. And when he says it's about fun, what would be a more articulate answer is that people enjoy hunting. Now, I'm not, again, but they do. I mean, this is a different culture to over here. And you can argue that. Now, you could also have taken that and flipped it and made it worse. But that all said to me, he got lost, so lost in the music, he just switched off to everything. But he even said at the end, before he played his last song, does anyone want any questions? And before anyone even had a chance to answer, he went, no, let's just put it on YMCA. And then started doing his dance. Yeah. Liz, what are your thoughts?
I think the issue is that us that are clearly footed in reality can't understand this because we're not triggered or motivated by these hypnotic techniques, which is what I see. Many years ago, when I worked at Saatchi's, I got a hypnotist, Paul McKenna, to come and hypnotise our clients and us. And I thought, I'm really looking forward to this because I want to be hypnotised to give up smoking. And I sat there wanting to be hypnotised. And my friend next to me, who was a researcher and very academic Oxford graduate, she went completely under. I mean, completely under. She went nuts. I mean, she was on the mid stage and she thought she was a teapot. She was the most shy person. And I saw her completely and utterly go crazy. And I was really jealous at the time because I wanted to be the teapot. And afterwards, I spoke to Paul McKenna and I said, why have I not been hypnotised? I want my money back. He said to me, the truth is this, a third of people are totally resistant to being hypnotised. And a third roughly go completely under. And then the other third, a midway between the two. And if you look at that from a sort of population point of view, that there's, and I think we've seen this with Brexit and we see it again with reform, that it is about feelings. And they say this, it is about feelings. And I think that whilst we see it as mad and repellent, Trump is not trying to get those people that are like us, the Democrats. He is actually trying to keep his base motivated. And facts don't do it. And it is feelings, as in he's the man. I felt great that day because I was dancing along to this. And that's what I think is going on. So I think that playing crazy is what he's up to. And he's just getting feelings up to make sure people get to the box on the day.
I think you're quite right about feelings. And also, I mean, when he is speaking, it's just a stream of like vomited non sequiturs and batshit crazy statements that make no sense anyway. Whenever you read a transcript of something that he said at a rally or a town hall event, it makes absolutely no sense. He can't hold a thought in his head for longer than 2 or 3 seconds. He's a goldfish politician. So when he actually comes out with this stuff, I suppose someone's told him, look, just dance. Spend 30, 40 minutes dancing. Like you've just said, Liz, the crowd will lap it up. They'll think they're having a good time. They'll go away feeling energized. I'm voting for the right guy. You know, it is sad. It is tragic that there's no cut through with facts, with evidence, with an argument that makes sense because it's based in reality, that he is so reliant on feelings now. But I do think on the plus side, he's unlikely to win anybody else over behaving like this. I have to believe that, like most civilized Western countries, over 50% of people will be swayed by the rational choice, the only choice, which is to vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. I just worry that because we've been here before, we may be in for a repeat of 2016. And of course, how dangerous is he going to be if, and hopefully when, he loses? Because that energized people.
We just had an alert this morning that North Korea is sending troops over to help Putin in Ukraine. Mm. And it will be disastrous for Europe. Putin will be coming across, and he's got his sights on, the Baltic states. So it's really, really scary. And for me, from the food perspective, that's where I come in. And I've said this for fucking years. You know, if there's climate change getting worse, which is one thing, if there's a war, and of course war became more likely because of Brexit, we are completely alone. With America goes crazy, with Trump and Putin swarms across Europe, we don't have enough food, which means that we've completely and utterly lost control, and we'll have to do the bidding for whoever is going to feed us. And that is a very dangerous situation to be in, which is why we say food security is national security. Mm. But I've said this over and over again, and people go, you farmers, it's all your fault. But, you know, I hate to say it, my gypsy genes and tea leaf reading, I wish I didn't have those skills, but everything that I feared about Brexit keeps coming true. And so I like Graham.
You saw it in the tea leaves, Liz. Is that right?
I did. I've got gypsy roots, did I not tell you?
You did. No, that's great. We're segueing into Brexit, aren't we?
We are.
But I think they are all linked. The whole thing is linked. And I do fear of the worst. I hope for the best. But in 2016, this is exactly, the parallels are there, aren't they?
And from 1930. And it's really interesting. I was I've just done a video for release on Sunday for comparing what Trump has been saying to the words of Adolf Hitler. And the reason I brought that up was because Fox News, like, attacked, well, they had an interview. You're going to get attacked in an interview. They had an interview with Kamala Harris. And one of the questions they said was, 50% of the country are voting for Trump. And I went, well, no, because there's a huge chunk that don't vote, and there's a huge chunk that aren't able to vote. So you've already said something that's inaccurate, but okay. Let's say 50% of the people who vote are going to vote Trump. And then he said, are they stupid? And you sort of go, that's a really tough thing to try and argue over. Because from a opposite perspective, you're going, wow, you're insane for voting for that man. All he says is absolute drivel. But he is hitting something, and that's grabbing people's attention. And one of the interesting things that you said, Liz, because I did some research on Hitler's speeches in order to show comparable quotes to what Trump said. Trump's actually being more direct than what Hitler was saying, which is fucking wild. And he managed to get 33% of the vote. So what do you say with that? Do you say that those 33% with Hitler were just stupid? Or were they extremist? Do you say the same with the guys that voted for Mussolini? 33%, 31% voted for Mussolini. So do you say that they were stupid? And one of the interesting things, I'll bring you in, Ben, with this. I was listening to a speech trainer, I want for a better word, and he was suggesting that it was actually with Hitler, if you listen to the way he builds his speech, it's a rhythm. And with that rhythm, it's quite hypnotic. And that then brings people in. So when you show them the words separate to the speech, when they read the words, they go, that's crazy. But when they listen to the speech, there's something that's quite hypnotic about it. And I wouldn't say I know I'm going to bring you in, Ben, because pointing.
No, I'm just thinking what you're saying.
I'm just saying that with Trump, I don't know if I've listened to his speeches. I've never felt there's a rhythm to it, but there's a disjointedness and there's a comedic element to it.
Yeah.
And there's an entertainment element to it, which is quite disturbing because essentially it's almost dumbed down in order to appeal to the audience to such a point that you've got to keep up with what he's saying to understand, otherwise you lose. And Alex, that's the hypnotic effect. Go on,
I can understand and appreciate why in 1930s Germany, so many average and above average intelligent people were seduced by what Hitler was saying, because there's a couple of things that are very different from the way that Hitler went about doing stuff to Trump. Trump came in and from day one was bonkers, was nuts, was speaking like he speaks now, disjointed sentences, appealing to people's feelings. The guy's clearly not particularly intelligent, whereas Hitler did this far more gradually over a very, very long period of time. So the frogs in boiling water effect, I think, was far more applicable with someone like Hitler than it is with Trump. With Trump, from day one, we knew exactly what we were getting. This guy is unsuited to high office. This guy is nuts. This guy is stupid. I love what Tim Walz said. I think it was one of the Democrat rallies last week, about the fact that he didn't know he'd outsourced God to China because the Made in China stickers in his Trump Bibles is on the inside, somewhere where Trump's never even looked. The guy doesn't read. He when he's asked what his favourite Bible passages are, he hasn't got a clue. Whereas Hitler, of course, was. Hitler knew through his gift of rhetoric how to bring people over to his way of thinking far more gradually. I mean, there's the old adage or phrase, whatever it is, that it didn't start with the gas chambers, anything but. It started with a very subtle othering of groups within German society. And it also started with promises, which is where there is a bigger similarity, I think, to Trump. I'm going to improve your way of life, whether it's transport, your jobs, steel industry, whatever it is. That for me is far more akin to what Trump has done. But I think there's big differences between the way Hitler went about getting people on side to the way that Trump hasn't even had to try. All he's been able to do is what Farage has done, what Johnson did. Get the stupid half of the population very easily on the same page. Get them in the palm of your hand. They'll do whatever you want. And once you've got them, he's quite right. He could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and they'd still vote for him. I've seen interviews with people convinced he is God's anointed. He is on this earth because God wants him here. If you vote for Trump, you've got no choice if you're a Christian. If you're a person of faith, you've got to vote for Trump. And they completely ignore everything, all the shit he's done. You know, the fact he's a convicted felon, the civil case where he was actually found guilty of rape. So all those other elements of his personality don't count for anything, you know? So I think there are similarities between what Hitler did in 1930s Germany and what Trump's done over the past 8 years, but there are also big differences as well. Yeah, it does concern me and it does bother me. And I am still slightly surprised that so many people are planning to vote for the Republicans. But I still believe, I think the Democrats are going to edge it. I think they're going to win. It worries me what will happen after that, of course, because we know what Trump is like. But at some point, a country like America has got to come back to sanity. It's got to come back to its senses, surely, because the future of the world kind of depends on it.
What do you think, Liz?
I think the stupidity thing is quite difficult. I don't believe all of the voters are stupid, but I do think it's possible to gather up people that are not particularly engaged with detail or motivated by detail. And I do think a lot of it is psychological, rather tribal psychological stuff, than actual intelligence, intellect. Because we know that plenty of intelligent people voted for Brexit and Trump. But they lean into whatever that tribal aspect is giving them. Unfortunately, there's a number of, you know, it happened with Germany. It's an outbreak of really psychopaths. That is what's playing out. That you lose the cohesion of society when empathy is gone, everyone's being scapegoated and gets into the scapegoating, and that pull, the gravity of that tribalism core, thinking, oh, I don't want to be on that side. This is where the culture politics comes in, because they're nerdy, so I'm going to be on Trump's side or Boris Johnson's side or Nigel Farage's side, because at the time they feel as if they're part of that tribe until that tribe start picking on them. And that is exact. It's exactly the same phenomenon. Why is it happening again, given that we promised that we wouldn't let it happen again, I think is probably the right question to ask. And what can we do to defeat it? And I do believe that if Trump gets in, it is going to be, you know, it's going to be disastrous for the world, and goodness knows where we'll end up. I don't know. So I wish I felt confident that he wouldn't get in, that he's not going to get in. But I really, looking at the polls, he's, you know, he's right behind her. The Electoral College, the same as first past the post, means that it's possible for him to get power with less than half of the votes. And also, we know that they don't respect the law in the Republican states, and there's going to be a lot of cheating going on. So it's pretty scary, I think, really. It's quite depressing and scary. I hope that after the election that I'm going to be partying and thinking, thank goodness Kamala had a massive win, because she needs a big win.
He seems to run away from her, doesn't he? Like, in terms, he won't have a second debate, which is interesting.
So but that's the same as Boris Johnson hiding in the fridge. You know, when you look at it from a campaign point of view, if you've got the opportunity to get out and get your message out, you have to ask, is that going to help me getting my message out? And as you pointed out, it's not. He didn't just stand on the stage. And Nigel Farage does it with holding up signs and fireworks going off. And, you know, it is about, oh, yeah, we're the guys. That's all they need to say. And that's what we have. How do we, as progressives who are awake, get those who've got lost to that to wake up? And that's what the clue to waking those people up from that trance is what we need to find.
There's something to be said about having someone with charisma come in. I was looking at FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, versus Hitler, who basically came in and lasted almost the exact same time, one for America and one for Germany, which is a freaking weird parallel. But it was interesting to see that he was able to use his charisma to get his message across. And it's something that I think we've been lacking a lot of. I think Kamala Harris, within her campaign, has suddenly built up quite a bit of confidence. The way she dealt with the Fox News host was pretty spot on. There were a couple of gaffes, but, you know, everyone's human. You can't always have it perfect. But in general, like, I don't think the opposite side of the argument has really put forward anyone with some charisma and ability to hold a speech and hold an audience. And I think that's one of the notable differences. And the reason I'm bringing FDR is that FDR comes in when he's got a huge economic decline. Hitler comes in when he's got a huge economic decline. We've had the same sort of things happening now. 2008 to now, UK has just been in economic decline. Like, you had austerity come in, which was just awful and a really, really bad idea. Maybe you could have cut some things, but you shouldn't have done it for a long extended period, maybe a year, if you could justify it for that.
We should have kept. That's the other argument.
But the point being is that there needed something to happen. And the alternative was to tax the rich. I looked at stats yesterday. 30% of Americans were in poverty under FDR. That's the same as in the UK now. The only difference is unemployment. We've got a low unemployment rate. Why is that? Because we've got a declining birth rate and 500,000 year leaving. And then, so the parallels that we had there with FDR and the American problem and what we have today are actually quite similar. And it seems that these extremist groups have the ability to come in as soon as we get a situation where the economy goes down. And Hitler really got back into the swing of things through having a second economic recession. So it was the first one where he pops up and starts building a party. The economy does well, everyone pushes him away. The economy suddenly flops again. And lo and behold, everyone starts listening to him because he gives simple answers to complex problems. And it's no different with Farage. We were talking off air about Jenrick. He's saying Enoch Powell stuff. And the thing for a lot of people is that what they're seeing is, migrants are coming in and the economy's going down. And it's like, no, the economy's going down and people aren't having kids and people are going, fuck this place. We're going to go somewhere else where the economy's better. And that's how they're sort of, I think, seeing this pattern where Farage can come in and go, see, it's them. Jenrick can come in, it's the strange people that you don't know. It's them that's causing the problems. And the other thing, there was an interview that we caught a clip of. I sent on the WhatsApp group. There was a historian on GB News. She pointed out that Ireland's having an economic boom. And it's in part because, and they've had two. One, in part because of they didn't put austerity measures in straight away, and they just dropped corporation tax.
And Brexit.
And then Brexit's the second part, which is
Particularly at the
amazing. I mean,
moment in
she
the
ripped it
financial
apart.
sector, because those, I think I read recently, 40,000 jobs lost in the city. The main beneficiary of those financial sector jobs lost in the city is Dublin, because obviously geographically it's pretty close to London. And we wonder why Ireland might be having this boom at the moment. You know, you've seen all the maps of the ferry companies that are diverting going through Britain to get to Dublin, because obviously it's a hell of a lot easier without all that red tape just to go straight to the capital of Ireland.
And they
So
speak
yeah,
English.
exactly,
Yeah. So you've
exactly.
got all the tourists going over there, and you've got all the language schools. Oxford and Cambridge have been decimated in their language schools because of all the red tape. Because you need a passport. All you need is a group of 20, 30 kids. One of them doesn't have a passport, or two. They're not going to get one. So you go, right, well, we'll go to Ireland. There's loads of economic booms happening over there because we
Yeah.
cut ourselves off. And for what
Yeah.
reason?
And I think going back to the beginning, actually, when Ben said there's the facts for rejoining, I was thinking at the time when you were saying that, Ben, somebody had thought to put the facts for Brexit as we were thinking about Brexiting. Because when people made that decision to Brexit in the referendum, that is, and then Theresa May's government afterwards, nobody actually sat down and said, where are the facts and how is this possible and what does it mean? They did do the work. There were impact assessments done by the government, Theresa May's government, but they kept them under lock and key. And you have to ask why. I mean, why were there not impact assessments done before we even decided to have a vote on doing such a massive thing? And then when you look at rejoining, why is there such caution on deciding to rejoin? All we need to do as campaigners actually is to get people to sort of say, you know what, this is really bad. And we do need to get rid of whatever, as much of Brexit as we possibly can.
Yeah.
And that's really all we need to do. The rest of it is up to the bloody politicians to sort out, quite frankly, and the civil service. That is really that in saying, oh, well, I want to rejoin, but there's too many problems. Actually, that in itself helps Brexit and the decline, because that's actually putting a barrier in between that mindset of we need to do
Sure.
that. And we have to be less doom-mongery and less details around these things. We just need to get the belief as in we've got all these problems and the solution is to rejoin the EU. That is what we need.
Absolutely. And there's a great analogy that actually I think Peter Corr at National Rejoin March came up with, and it's stuck in my mind. It's as if Keir Starmer at the moment is sitting in front of a massive control desk with hundreds of buttons, and every single button says improve the UK economy by 0.001%. And he's pressing them, thinking, great, that'll help, that'll help, that'll help. But there's this great big button in the top right-hand corner that says improve the UK economy by a minimum of 4% immediately. And is ignoring it. And that's rejoin the single market, rejoin the customs union, something we do not have to have a referendum to do. We can just do. And yes, they would have us back straight away. We just join the bloody thing. And then obviously the next step, of course, is rejoin the European Union proper, because we wouldn't have a say, wouldn't have our feet under the table. We'd be a rule taker, not a rule maker. So there's all those arguments as well. But that's one thing he can do, a lever he can pull right now, that if he wants to put country before party, which he promised he would do, you can't make the argument that you're doing that when you've got that lever, that button that you're refusing to press. For what actual reason? Because who is he scared of? That's something else I do not understand.
I
Okay, the
don't
right
know
wing
if
press.
he's scared of someone. I think it's the I
The
think what
caution,
I'm
though.
it's the AI thing, isn't it? It's the decision to go the same as in America, they've got GMO and the massive
Yeah.
impact on food and public health from that, which is why we have the precautionary principle in Europe. And that really is what the war has been going on between Europe and America for decades, the hormone war, that all of those things. America's as in just stick it all in there and make the money. And Europe is kind of like, actually, we don't want to kill our citizens. We want to be careful around this. And the advantage, in inverted commas, of Brexit is being out of the precautionary system. And Boris Johnson has said it himself. The great advantage was we got the vaccine into you ahead of everyone else. But don't forget, the people that actually voted Brexit, most of them were anti-vaxxers. That's the other funny thing about that, because they really are quite left-wing and quite precautionary, which is the advantage of being in the single market, is that you're not used as a guinea pig.
You said the other thing, funny thing about that, aside from the fact that, of course, it's also a huge lie, that we could have done exactly
well,
what we did anyway.
I know that. But the advantage, what he's saying, we were in transition and it was a lie, but what he was trying to make out is that in the future, we can do this with AI. And that is what's happening. They're doing, Palantir here, they've got big contracts and,
No, we've gone.
The Starlink is down.
Damn you, Musk. I felt that with all of this, there was also an element of deregulation being brought in. And I also get a sense that's going to continue under Labour. Do I also get a funny feeling from you, Ben, as an element of dissatisfaction with the first 100 days of Labour?
There is. And I think when you look at the first 100 days, I mean, I think it was James O'Brien at LBC that said recently, when people say all politicians are the same, that's just walking into a trap that serves nobody but the extremists. And I completely agree with him. And there are things I think Labour should be criticised justly for in their first 100 days, and things that they shouldn't. And the confected outrage at the moment about Taylor Swift, it just doesn't interest me in the slightest. It's ridiculous. Howard Wilson met the Beatles. Cameron met One Direction. What the fuck? You know, it doesn't matter. These things really don't matter. And the fact you've got some of our best, in inverted commas, journalists devoting a hell of a lot of airtime to this should tell people that actually, broadly speaking, we've got a government here that might want to be doing, in the main, the right things for the country. So we've got to find something to attack them with. The Daily Mail front page about Taylor Swift is absurd. It's in the same kind of ilk as the pages on the back page of the Daily Mail about Thomas Tuchel being the England manager. You know, we've had a couple of foreign managers before, and Fabio Capello and Sven-Göran Eriksson, who just died, and there was an outpouring of love for the guy. Oh, is it because he wasn't German and they're more evil? I mean, I don't quite understand this one.
Because there's an interesting fact that you missed out. The England's women's football manager just won 2022.
Yes. What are they talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. What are they talking about?
Well, it's not an issue there for some reason.
It's because it's German. That was the other thing that came across.
It must be.
And they were like, but this is the thing where you go, there's that Empire World War II mentality. The only reason they're saying that is because it's German.
Can I just remind you something?
Go on.
The royal family are German as well.
Yeah.
You beat me to it.
And that's it. And the Daily Mail's headline was a dark day. They had a picture of Thomas Tuchel, a dark day. That's really, really worrying stuff, isn't it?
Oh, completely.
It's totally typical for the Daily Mail. It's their MO. But I mean, a dark day?
Well, they were the ones that were complaining about Jewish immigrants World War II.
Yeah.
And the build-up. Nothing's changed. You would have gone, wow, what an amazing day, a step forward. We actually now can combine ourselves and, you know, learn from each other and work together in harmony. No, they're awful.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't. That is literally the antithesis of the reaction that you should have had to that.
Surely,
it's just racist. And they've been allowed to get away with it again.
When you say get away with it, I mean, we touched on this earlier, and I think one of and this was talking about how do we address this situation that we're in? Less regulation, more regulation, and we certainly do need more regulation, whether it's the water companies, whether it's the food sector, whatever it is in society. The fact that we've deregulated so much and we're on this now drive to the bottom, everything's deregulated, and of course, look at the press. The stuff they are allowed to get away with in the media and the press, unchallenged. You've got one or two excellent journalists like Victoria Derbyshire and Emily Maitlis and maybe Christian Guru Murth, but the vast majority of them are so easily swayed. We've got Laura Koonsberg paid £325,000 a year to send her briefing notes and questions to Boris Johnson and then apologise for it like, oh, sorry, can't do the interview now.
I think that was a setup, wasn't it?
What the hell is going on there?
He referred to it in one of his interviews. He said that his friend Laura was...
His friend Laura.
Getting attacked for interviewing him. And it was a get-out-of-jail card from her perspective. And because he was bemoaning the attacks on social media. So poor journalists get attacked. I mean, the thing is actually that that is the main difference between Hitler and where we are now. Social media is a massive player in building these feelings around the tribes. And when you've got tribes that are pitted against each other, you know, the dark forces have got the ability to divide and rule and conquer. So that's unfortunately where we are. And I think that if as humans you turn around and say, we're all humans, we all, our best interests as humans are all best served by clubbing together and making sure that communities are sound and safe. But I don't see much sign of that, unfortunately. And there's, it's decades of the right-wing press pitting people against each other and making people feel angry about things, to the extent this week on this farm, one of our neighbours, as we're trying to get our maize in, and bearing in mind my husband was born here, and told us that us country folk, I won't give, I mean, it was very bad language, he told one of our members of staff that us country folk need to F off out of here, and to use the C word as well. And you're just thinking, we feed you. And, you know, and then if farms are not in these fields, it's once a year we have to bring our crops in and it's resented. So, yeah, the country has been pitted against each other, and the whole country of the UK. Everybody's blaming, scapegoating. And that is why it's dangerous. So it is about, and sometimes, you know, I think there's a tendency for Remainers to think that they're right about everything, and that it's, but in many ways in doing that you're actually being tribal as well. We have to try and reach out and come together, and you know, I don't know how we begin that, but in some ways that we were talking when we were off air about the success of Blue Sky, a lot of Remainers have left X because it's too right wing and it's comfy and safe on Blue Sky. But it's not actually achieving anything because we're in a bubble of all in agreeing with each other, and we're not actually changing any minds of the right wing who've got lost. So, you know, I don't know how we repair that. I hoped that the Labour government was going to be in that, but I'm not seeing any signs.
It's regulation. I mean, and also, I mean, looking back at Labour's 100 days, there are things they've done quite quickly that I think were excellent. I mean, the handling of the riots I thought was good, and that was a way of addressing some of this right-wing rhetoric and the bollocks that we've had to put up with. And of course you get slammed for that. Scrapping Rwanda, that's good. But then they have these huge missteps. I mean, the winter fuel payment thing not being thought through properly at all, putting people just above the poverty line under it. I mean, when all it had to be done was just thought through. Okay, that we need a cutoff point here. If your household income is over this amount, you don't get it. If it's under, you do. But no.
No, you don't, Ben, you don't need that. No.
What do you need?
Universalism is universalism. You could have offered an amnesty. You could have said, times is tough, guys. If you're super wealthy, don't take your WFA, you know? Yeah. And that would have been a really good campaign to run. It would have been popular, because the thing is, means testing costs money.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
So yeah. There is no benefit in doing that. It's the same with the school fees, VAT. But it's a political weapon, which is like a boomerang that comes back and hits you.
It's backfired in so many ways, because, of course, if people who are now encouraged to take up pension credit do so, the 800,000 people do so, that will wipe out any of the £1.3 billion worth of savings, which in the grand scheme of things is small fry anyway. So if Rachel Reeves has shot herself in the foot with that.
It's £3 billion. It will cost £3
billion. To do what?
Just to implement the 800,000 people.
If they take up the pension credit,
it will cost £3 billion.
Yeah.
So then you go, they must be anticipating that most of them won't take it up.
I think they are.
That's fucked.
It's a very weird own goal as well. That the very first group of people, though, Labour go after, you know, ostensibly left of centre government go after as pensioners. It just, the optics of it are appalling.
Yeah. Well, they are, but also the younger people all stayed in for COVID to look after their elderly relatives. So it is a stupid thing to think that, oh, only young people vote Labour, so we'll only serve the young. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. And they should U-turn on it, and they should U-turn
absolutely. Absolutely, and I don't see that happening, but I think that the pressure will continue to grow, and we'll see.
No more austerity. And the first things they do is put through austerity. Yeah. Taking away the winter fuel allowance is austerity. They could have said, you know what, we're going to do something slightly different with the winter fuel allowance. We're going to, you know, we're going to do it differently. But the way they did it was dreadful.
Absolutely. The way they did it and the optics, it were appalling. And the fact that we're now even discussing the fact that the 25% council tax reduction may be abolished as well, equally puts very young people who have just got their foot in the door and rented accommodation or managed to buy a property against the odds, and of course pensioners living alone, again under the spotlight and being victimized, which it just doesn't seem a very Labour thing to do at all. So again, it comes back to this question that I've still got in my mind. Why, it's not caution, what, who is he afraid of? Who is Starmer and who are the front bench afraid of, that they're putting through measures like this that just are instantly unpopular?
I think if you look at who's backing them, because a lot of the ex-Tory donors and wealthy have come on to Labour. So you've got Jim Ratcliffe, a big Brexiteer, and you've also got the Phones for EU guy, John
Caulfield, yeah.
Caldwell, and he's a big backer of getting rid of the winter fuel allowance and a big backer of Brexit. I think my hunch is that's the problem. You know, donors have got a lot more weight than voters. That's the problem.
It feels like it, doesn't it? Yeah. Like there was a fundraiser, I'm not going to go into too much details of who he was, but he said, there was a quote in The Guardian yesterday saying, I'd rather have 3 billionaires than 10,000 supporters. And when you look at it in those type of figures, you're just like, does make a lot of sense. It's horrific though for democracy. I mean, this is a historic problem with democracy. It's always in fighting with capitalism. And the two don't really mesh that well. They seem to just about get on, but they're not great. Because at the end of the day, the rich are always just going to go, no, this is the way I want to go. Yeah. Why are you telling me what to do? And one of the interesting things I thought you could have done, or I would have considered doing if I'd been in charge, would have been, I would have had a year where I would have gone, right, anyone earning over 100,000 a year, you lose your 12,500 tax exemption just for that year. That would have given me, by my calculations, 1.2 billion. That covers the winter fuel payment. And at very least, that gives you another year to then make sure everyone's on pension credit, if that's what you want to do. But it doesn't make any sense. Like, literally doesn't make any sense. And the other thing, as you keep saying, Ben, there's a big red button saying, press me, rejoin. The first thing that would happen if you even announced that was that the pound would go up.
I know.
So your imports would be cheaper.
So again, I come back to my question, who is he afraid of? What is he afraid of? The right-wing press are going to give him a hard time anyway. They are doing right now. So he can forget that one. The millionaire, billionaire donors, some of whom he's now got in his pocket that he's got to accommodate. I kind of get that. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, because we need someone charismatic to come along and make the case for common sense here. And they're not doing. That's you, is it, Alex? You are the
charismatic. I'll give it a go. It can't be any bloody worse.
All hail the lava lamp. You've got that.
Hail the lava lamp.
Exactly.
Yeah, you've got a cult following.
Absolutely. This to me, though, brings me on to something I did want to talk about, which is this vacuum now on the centre-right of politics. Now that the Tories have picked the worst two possible final two for the, I don't know, Lord Sugar's £250,000 investment in a dog food factory, whatever it is. I mean, Jenrick and Badenoch, for God's sake. One of them is actually just insane, and one of them I think is a little bit on the evil side. You think about their love score.
More than a little bit, Ben.
Oh, my God. But look, I mean, my view is one of them's going to win. I think it might be Jenrick, but it doesn't matter, because it'll be 2 years more of them tanking in the polls, reform cleaning up, and then somebody might just put two and two together and think, do you know what we need to do? We need to go back to the centre ground. We need a few characters like Dominic Grieve, Anna Soubry, Antoinette Sambatch, Sam Gyimah, Ken Clark to come back into the Tory party and rebuild that One Nation element that's clearly gone out the window. And as Liz was talking about off air, the best way for them to do that would be to seize the rejoin banner and say, do you know what? We fucked up with Brexit. We really, really did. Let's put it right. Let's get back in the single market, the customs union, the EU, if they'll have us. And let's put, you know, this dent in the economy to bed, to rest once and for all. That will then legitimise the debate. Labour can talk about it because they're still refusing to. The Lib Dems, the Greens. I mean, we know where they stand roughly on this. But the Tory party is the most successful electoral party in British history. And until the EU are satisfied that they ain't ever going to pull a stunt like this again, it is in our interest that the Tory party regain the centre ground and stop trying to emulate Farage, because they're never going to beat him. They're never going to win there. He's got the charisma. He's got Lee Anderson. You know, he's got Richard. They've got Badenoch and Jenrick, who are fundamentally unlikable. They're just not likable. Who's going to vote for either of them in the public?
Well, they're not. It would end up with a split with reform, you know, with reform or some sort of, they'd probably amalgamate. Somewhere.
Or defectations to the Lib Dems. 25, yeah. It would take. There'd be the official opposition.
I don't, you know, I think it would be good, and it's been said many times, if a lot of Remainers joined the Conservative Party, because the main problem is the membership is so right-wing, but it's not a very big membership now. And if a whole load of hundreds of thousands of Remainers joined the Conservatives, it would ensure that change.
Yeah.
But of course, you've got to go in and get in bed with them, and that's a bit uncomfortable, but it is the answer that we need to really take over the Conservatives. UKIP took over the Conservatives after the Brexit vote. And that is really what needs to happen. Remainers need to organise and get into the Conservative Party and swing it back to the centre. But I really sense that Boris Johnson and his book is there because he feels they're going to crash and burn, and they'll be looking for a new leader, and they'll think, oh, we'll turn to Boris because he did it last time. And that's my fear. And then you're back in the zone of Boris Johnson and the Tories, Nigel Farage, and reform, and you've got a repeat of the 2019 election with Labour Party, if they continue with Starmer not doing that well.
You say that, but there was a Brexit bonus. Boris's book wasn't on sale in Europe, and within a week, it was half price. It's already at £10, and you're going, wow, that is a collapse. And it makes you wonder, is that youth generation coming through really paying attention to Conservatives and reform? And I'm hoping it's not the case. I'm sorry to say, guys, we're out of here. Ben, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Please go check out his channel if you enjoyed it, and Liz's channel. If you enjoyed today's video and you want to see more of this and you want us to get bigger and better, hit that like and subscribe button. Once again, guys, thanks very much. The other thing, oh God, I lost my train of thought there. Damn it.